Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is the fashion designer, Professor Wendy Dagworthy. During her time as head of fashion at both Central St Martin's and the Royal College of Art, she has taught students who've gone on to great success, Stella McCartney, Erdem and Antonio Berardi among them. Her skill lies partly in understanding the significance of, say, a well-cut pattern or a nicely turned seam, but also the warp and weft of a notoriously fickle industry. At just 23, she herself was the toast of the catwalks, with her own label selling round the world and worn by the likes of Brian Ferry, Boy George and Mick Jagger. Dubbed the High Priestess of Fashion, her creative talent, however, wasn't recession-proof and her business went under in the late 80s. Given that reinvention is the lifeblood of fashion, it seems she was tailor-made for a new direction. Collecting her OBE in 2011 for services to the fashion industry, she wore a Perspex hat designed by a former pupil. She says, "We want students to take risks, like we did when we were younger, because there were no set rules. There was no one to follow. You just did it yourself." So that idea, Professor Wendy Dagworthy, of taking risks, that is central to creativity, is it, in fashion?
Totally central. And we always encourage our students to really challenge what's going on, not do what's been before. So it's really finding your own design identity, believing in what you do, and being passionate about what you do.
Style, as we know, is very different from fashion. For a lot of women, it's a minefield, what to put together, what to wear, how people will judge you, what messages you're sending. What you're wearing today, what message is that sending? You're wearing a black silk sort of shift that's very shiny. Yeah. You're wearing a pair of white, they're sort of golf shoes adapted for everyday wear with a silver thong on them and a very decorative necklace.
I think I just put together what I think's right. I don't tend to follow fashion as such. And I think people need to find their own style, whether it be designer wear or clothes from the high street or wherever. I tend to mix and match anything. And I think if you look uncomfortably in something and the clothes are wearing you and you're not wearing them, it's much better to be easy and feel comfortable.
What would I find you wearing at home if you weren't expecting visitors? Would you ever wear a pair of sort of baggy bottomed sweatpants and some old slippers and a t-shirt with a stain down the front?
Yes. Yes, I would. And I tend to wear jeans and a sweatshirt, t-shirt, and slippers from a hotel room that you're given free.
But you always wear, and I feel bad that I've had to ask you to take them off this morning, you always wear, it's a sort of signature of yours, this great armful, and it goes really from your wrist right up to your elbow joint, of silver bracelets. That's your thing?
It is. My husband's bought them all for me over the many, many years we've been married. He's bought them for anniversary, Christmas, birthday. They're very precious.
Well, I'm sorry that I asked you to take them off here today.
No, you'll forgive me. I don't mind.
Well, let's have your first piece of music then, Wendy Dagworthy. Tell me about this. Why have you chosen it?
So it's Virginia Plain by Roxy Music. They were looking for a designer to design some stage clothes for them. And this was in something like 1972, when they were first starting out. And I designed clothes for Brian and for Phil Manzanera. And some of them are on the album cover for Your Pleasure. And this has great memories for me, travelling with them to different gigs. I remember we went to one in Bath and my husband and I were on the coach going to the gig. And I remember getting off and John was amazed. He felt like a pop star. All the screaming girls as they get off the coach. I mean, it was brilliant. So we had some great times.
Take me on a roller coaster. Take me for an airplane ride.
That was Roxy Music and Virginia Play, and you were saying going into that, Wendy Dagworthy, that you made clothes in those very early 70s. We are in the middle of a, I suppose it's more of a kind of late 70s and early 80s revival right now, seeing the sort of resurgence, certainly in high street shops, of those kind of styles. What's your view of that when things come around quite quickly? Do you just think, oh, that's a bit lazy?
No, I don't, because things do come around, and I think they always come around in a very, very different way. And I did the exhibition at the V&A, Club to Catwalk, and actually a lot of those clothes you could really wear now, but you would wear them in a different way.
What about the thorny issue of catwalk fashion? Because, you know, what we see when we look at the catwalks, either online or in snapshots, you know, it's women who don't look like us displaying clothes that we will never wear. That's what it feels like to us normal people. We're getting it wrong, are we? Should we embrace the catwalk and everything it stands for?
Well, I think designers are starting to slightly move away from the catwalk as well. I mean, I don't think it'll ever go away because it's the best way of showing clothes. But designers are doing other things, like just presentations or film. But I know the models are very slim, but they're the best people to put clothes on to show them to the best advantage.
I know, but that's what designers and people in the fashion industry always say. And real women like me think, well, so that means I can't look good in your clothes. If a real woman who's a size 12, 14, actually 16, as we know, on the high street in Britain, if she can't walk down a catwalk looking beautiful in your clothes, you're not designing them right.
Well, I agree. But I think it's having attitude, courage of your own convictions to actually wear those clothes and take that on board. I mean, I'm 5'4". I'm certainly no catwalk model.
You're very slim, though.
Well, not that slim, probably. But I never wear very tight-fitting clothes. So I just think, you know, you wear clothes that suit you. But I think it's a matter of attitude and really, you know, being positive in your outlook and saying, actually, I can wear that. I mean, I remember seeing people walking on the street in my clothes, and it's a wonderful feeling. And I didn't care. I mean, yeah, they're all shapes and sizes. It doesn't matter. I just think, you know, it's so important that people are actually buying them and wearing them. And sometimes it's completely how you didn't imagine it being worn. But that doesn't matter. I think that's up to the person.
Let's have your next piece of music, Professor Wendy Dagworthy. We're on your second. Tell me about this then.
So this is Van Morrison. Days Like This. It's such a great record, this one, because it's those feelings of those days when, you know, everything goes right, or you just get that phone call and you think, oh, yes. Like when I got the phone call about coming on Desert Island Discs, I thought, yeah, it was been a secret dream. And it was just think, God, how amazing. Just those days, they're the best.
When it's not always raining, there'll be days like this. When there's no one complaining, there'll be days like this. Everything falls into place like the flick of a switch. Well, my mama told me there'll be days like this. When you don't need to worry, there'll be days like this. When no one's in a hurry, there'll be days like this.
That was Van Morrison and Days Like This. And you were saying, Wendy Dagworthy, that another reason that you chose that beautiful track was because your father was a great sax player.
Yes, he was. He was very musical. He used to play the piano as well.
Your father, Arthur, then was a signwriter and your mum, Jean, was a housewife. You were brought up in Gravesend in Kent. Paint me a little picture of family life. What was life at home like?
It was very happy. My father used to do the signs in the garage if it wasn't a big one. And I used to go and help him sometimes. And it was brilliant, you know, help him chalk a board, and he was just such a perfectionist at what he did. And I remember his garage where he used to brush off the excess paint off the brushes. The whole walls of the whole garage were just covered in paint, different colours, and it was just like a painting in itself. It was brilliant.
And he made doll's houses for you, did he?
He made me a doll's house that I still have.
Do you?
Yes, still have it. It's a double-fronted house with four windows and a little front door that opens and the roof comes off and the back. So I used to play with it for hours and hours. And my mother made the clothes for the little dolls in there. But I used to make a lamp out of a screw upside down with a toothpaste cap on it. And that was a little lampshade.
So you were a creative little girl. You were good with your hands.
Yes. I used to make clothes from the age of probably 12. I used to buy Simplicity patterns or Mary Quant patterns at the time. And I just used to adapt them and make clothes. I mean, we used to go out to a party or dance, you know, Saturday night, and you go to the market in the morning, buy some fabric and make a dress for the evening.
It's interesting you say, well, you know, the patterns you used to adapt them. Where did you get the confidence to adapt a pattern? Most of us stick slavishly if we've got the nerve to make one at all.
I don't know. I just used to cut them up. And I think, you know, I suppose clothes were quite simple then in a way, because they were the, you know, A-line shifts. And so they were easy to knock up.
Simple for you.
In
maybe.
An afternoon.
Can you remember the first time you actually sewed something, put it on and wore it out in public?
Yes, I can. It was a pink gingham shift dress, round neck, sleeveless, and that was it.
And
I remember covers of Honey. I remember seeing a pink shift dress on, I think it was probably Twiggy, and I just thought, oh, that's great. So I went out and got pink gingham. I've always loved gingham anyway.
But. And were you accessorising? Were there other things with it?
Probably some Mary Jane shoes and probably bare legs.
Let's have some more music, Wendy Dagworthy. Tell me about your third.
OK, the third one is Save the Last Dance for Me by the Drifters. And this takes me back. I was probably 14, and it was the first time I'd be going out to dances, and we used to go to the boys' grammar school dances. We knew the bands, and we used to be dancing up the front with our handbags in the middle, and they always used to play this song at the end of the dance.
Oh, I know that the music's fine, like sparkling wine, go and have your fun. Laugh and sing, yes, but while we're apart, don't give your heart to anyone. Cause don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, save the last dance for me.
That was the Drifters and Save the Last Dance for Me. Professor Wendy Dagworthy, you are one of those, the member of that generation who really... the term teenagers was invented for. So there you are growing up in Gravesend in Kent through the 50s and early 60s. Mm-hmm. And you started off seeing women, I imagine, in the streets wear hat and gloves when they went out, and then saw the gradual abandonment of that as you yourself became a teenager. Were you aware of that? Was it tangible to you that things were changing in terms of style?
Probably not at the time, but I think it was a really fantastic time to grow up. And... yeah, there was a sense of freedom because clothes for teenagers used to be the same as their mothers. And excitement as well. You know, sense of anticipation when you're going out to those dances for the first time and meeting boys. And you know, it was just, ooh. And we used to go to the Black Prince Sunday nights and see people like Zoot Money and John Mayall. And, you know, it was just quite incredible. My father used to take us and someone else's father used to come and collect us. And in clothes, yeah, we used to go to Carnaby Street and... Bieber. I can remember buying a bright pink mini frock and, you know, purple shoes and things like that. I mean, it was great.
And when you bought those copies of Honey magazine each month and sort of took them home to your bedroom and leafed through the pages, were you thinking, oh, I want to dress like her? Or were you thinking, I wouldn't do it like that, you know?
Certain people, yeah, I did identify with, yes. And I just think, yeah, like Twiggy, for instance, and you know, it was Ready, Steady, Go as well at that time. Kathy McGowan, you know, I thought she was brilliant. Her hair and
very stylish.
Yeah, very. I mean, you know, she was one I'd want to, you know, copy, I suppose.
Very few people. I mean, you were making your own clothes. We heard about the little gingham dress, yeah, which I have to say I think sounds fabulous. But very few people, and certainly very few teenagers these days, would sit in front of, you know, a sewing machine and bother to run something up for themselves. Do you think that's a result of the sort of the availability of mass-produced fashion? You know, things now are so cheap that people are put off putting in the effort.
Yes, definitely. I mean, now you can just buy something so cheaply that it's much more expensive to buy the fabric and make it yourself. Whereas then, I mean, because I suppose it was not long after the war as well, people made clothes and, you know, sort of mended clothes. I remember my mother darning socks and, you know, it was unheard of now. And, you know, I used to make clothes out of something else, you know, maybe a dress of my mother's. So some students, they come to college, you know, doing their first BA, and they can't even make anything. You just think, why not? You know, if you're interested in that, why haven't you tried to make it yourself? And I think that's really important to actually address that in an art college.
Let's have some more music, Wendy Dagworthy. Tell me about your fourth then. What are we going to hear next?
The fourth one is Do You Really Want to Hurt Me by Culture Club and Boy George. He used to come into the studio and buy clothes. There's a great photograph of him travelling at the airport. He's got a black and white check mohair coat of mine on.
Yes.
Yeah, that's all my things. And yeah, it was such a great time, the 80s. We worked really hard. We were travelling a lot. We were doing about 6 exhibitions a year in Milan, Paris and London. You know, it was a time we thought would never end.
Culture Club with Boy George there, and Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? That was released around about 1982, so the height of his fame and sort of the height of your business and when you were making...
picking up again.
Yes. I want to rewind a little bit. You left home when you were 18, Wendy. That was in 1968. You moved to London and you went to Hornsey School of Art in North London. You graduated from there with a first-class degree, and your end-of-term show, as I understand it, caused quite a stir. It was covered in the Times. Tell me a little bit about the clothes that you designed for that.
The clothes were very tailored, very structured suits, mainly, in bright colours, greens and tartans, and mixed with Liberty prints. I think at the beginning I was starting to mix things that didn't really go together. And before that, at Medway College of Art... You know, it was just great going to art college. We had such a fantastic foundation. We did everything from, you know, silversmithing, ceramics and, painting, fine art. Absolutely everything.
I'm wondering how you started your business. If you have, you know, your parents were just normal people, they weren't well off. How did you actually begin that small fashion business?
Well, I used to make all my own clothes after leaving college and clothes for friends, satin jackets, sequins, Lurex, yes. Fabrics that actually you wouldn't normally wear a jacket in or trousers. And a friend of mine used to wear my clothes, and she had a friend who had a shop called Countdown in the King's Road. And they said, I love your jacket. So I took some of my jackets along and they bought. So I thought, maybe if they're interested, other shops will. So I chose shops that I thought might be interested in my clothes. And when I first got orders, and, you know, because I had to find money from somewhere, my mother gave me £300 to start, and the bank and her with that first support, and the whole thing started from there, really.
When you were designing your collections, you know, your signature items, actually, I'm sure they were well cut, but they were unstructured looking. You know, they were sort of full circle skirts and oversized jackets and wool coats and so on.
Yeah.
Where did you get your inspiration for those things?
Ooh, many places. Travel, India, that was a constant inspiration. You know, I used to look at the detailing on workwear. Attention to detail, that's what I think is really important. Every detail of a garment should be thought about, down to the last buttonhole, because that's what makes a great garment as opposed to a garment. And Africa, I used to look to. China. So I think, and pattern. I love pattern.
Did you travel to those places, India and China and so on?
I went to India, which was fantastic. I used to buy a lot of fabrics from India, and I saw some of them being made. And that was what's so nice about the fabric. It wasn't perfect. It had imperfections, where maybe someone on the loom in the afternoon had a different tension, or a twig had got in.
Let's have your next piece of music, Wendy Dagworthy. Tell me about this next one.
So, it's How Can I Mend a Broken Heart by Al Green.
And why have you chosen this?
It was a very poignant time for me. I was starting on my own, and I just love a soppy song.
How can you stop the rain from fall down. Tell me how can you stop that old sun from shining? What makes the world go round?
How can you mend a broken heart, Al Green there? You said, introducing that piece of music, Wendy Dagworthy, that it reminded you of, you know, a time that was difficult, of starting up your business, and I guess having the courage to start up your business. Were you worried in the beginning, in those early days, as well as having the dream that you could do it? The actual practicalities must have been rather overwhelming.
Do you know what? I don't think I ever thought about it. I never thought I'm going to start my own company. I think I just gradually went into it.
And as the orders come in, just take me through that process, would you? So somebody says, oh, we like that jacket. We'll have 40 of those, please. When you're a tiny sort of one-man band, how do those jackets actually get made?
Well, I found one machinist and I used to cut whatever it was, shirts, jackets, trousers by then. I'd done a little capsule collection. And we used to sew the buttons on myself and then iron them and take them shut. So, yeah, that was the process. It was very cottage industry.
And you were very young. What age would you have been when all this was going on?
About 23.
So that was about the same time that you married John, your husband?
We got married in that August, yes.
It wasn't until you were in your late 30s, 37, I think, when you had your first son, Augustus. Mm. Was it that your career was all-consuming? Were you preoccupied with all this making up and stocking the shops?
Yes, we probably were both preoccupied because John, a photographer, he had his own business as well. And I think, yeah, but we wanted children. I had a couple of miscarriages, so, you know, they didn't come when you wanted them to. And I mean, that feeling of elation, it was one of those days when I found out I was pregnant. It was wonderful.
And then 3 years later, you have another son, Somerset.
Yeah.
And I am wondering, here you are, you know, a young designer with all of the demands. You've got two little kids, two toddlers. In amongst the, you know, the mashed banana and the Play-Doh and the baby sick, how do you stay in touch with the cutting edge? Because, you know, that's what good fashion is about. You're in touch with the street.
Yes, yeah. Well, when I had Augustus, yeah, he was born in 87, and that was the beginning of the end, I think, for me in fashion, because Black Monday.
The financial crash.
We lost practically all the shops we sold to in America. Overnight, practically, and Italy. And we carried on for a bit, but then I had to put the business into liquidation. We were up against those big giants as well. We couldn't afford to advertise. I probably should have got a backer, but I never did. And I just think, in a way, it's good that it happened.
When you have built a small business, you know, I mean, people who were buying clothes in the 80s will remember your name. You know, it was up there with the best of them. When you've built a business to the stage where your name is recognisable, your clothes are recognisable, when you see the pyramid of cards collapsing and you're not in control of it, what's the sensation?
Relief. It was a sense of relief, in a way. I never thought it would happen. You know, I could see me going on forever and ever being a designer. But I think if you go through that for a year or so, and it was a real struggle.
And that is what sort of saying to creditors, I can't meet the bills.
Yes, I mean, it's a horrible time to have to go through. It feels very personal, but I think the letters I got were brilliant, actually. And I'm quite positive in my outlook. So I just thought, well, we've got to move on. I didn't know what I was going to do when I put my business into liquidation. I didn't know. And well, it turned out really well.
Let's have some music, Wendy Dagworthy. Tell me about this, your sixth of the morning.
Handle with Care, the Travelling Wilburys. We've listened to it for years and years, and it just reminds me of holidays in Mallorca with the boys.
Being beat up and battered around, being sent up and I've been shot down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. Handle me with care. Reputation's changeable. Situation's terrible. But baby, you're adorable. Handle me with care.
The Travelling Wilburys and Handle with Care. Wendy Dagworthy, do you ever take your designs out of the attic, or maybe they're still in your wardrobe, and sort of, you know, try them on and look at them and think, you know, they weren't half bad?
I've got 7 huge trunks that serve as bedside tables in every every bedroom. And my sons, they go through the trunks and they wear my clothes, and they've got coats from the 80s, shirts from the 70s. They wear them now.
Given that they're your sons, do they ever say, "Mum, what were you thinking? That's a disaster."
They haven't actually as yet, but I'm sure, yeah, some things they would.
So around about the time that you shut up shop with your business then, you were invited to join Central St Martin's College in London teaching. Was it difficult to feel enthusiastic about that, or did you find that you had a natural vigour?
No, I just went for it. I just thought... Well,
you're somebody
is...
who looks ahead,
are yeah, you? Yes. Yeah. I never look back in regret. I don't think you can change what's happened, and you just have to go forward. And I was external examiner there at that time. So it was a easy transition.
And were you a stickler? Were you one of those people who would sort of turn over a buttonhole or a seam and think, not on my watch?
Yes. Yes, I was. Yeah, because I think attention to detail is really important. And it was great. I mean, yeah, I just did it my own way, I suppose.
Did you? I mean, I know you've only now just stepped down as a professor, but when you're talking to your students, do you tell them about, you know, your personal history? Do you say to them, look, don't be too starry-eyed about this because it's really, really tough?
Yeah. Yes, we do. And we have, I mean, at college, at Royal College, we used to have other designers coming in, talk about the pitfalls, and it's not, I mean, everyone thinks it's very glamorous being a fashion designer. It's not. It's really hard work. You know, once you finish one collection, you're on to the next. And you have to love it to do it. But best not to be a complete fashion victim. Have other interests as well.
Literally a fashion victim, yeah. Yes. Let's have your next piece of music then, Wendy. Tell me what we're going to hear now. This is your 7th.
Yes. No Woman, No Cry.
Why have you chosen this?
Bob Marley and the Wailers. Because when this album was recorded, my husband and I, John, we were actually there at the Lyceum Ballroom in the Strand, July 1975. And it was such a brilliant evening. Jam-packed. It was, you know, unforgettable.
That was Bob Marley and the Wailers and No Woman, No Cry. And as you say, Wendy Dagworthy, you were there in the audience.
Yes.
Could you hear yourself shouting there maybe in the background, I wonder? It was 1998 then when you became a head professor of fashion at the Royal College of Art. And as I understand it, you were tasked with spicing up a slightly stuffy art school. So what was on your to-do list?
I think it was to get a really good team together, bringing new young designers as well. So completely lift it. And encourage students to really do what they believed in and to enjoy it as well. I think that's really important, to enjoy what you do.
So if they say, you know, I want to laser print a bumblebee onto a pair of trousers that have got no backside in them and have funny flipper feet that are almost like shoes, do you say, you go right ahead?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I do. I mean, within reason, obviously, but yeah, you can advise. And it's up to them whether they want to take that advice or not. But, you know, for commercial reasons, you can always bring something back. They can go as far as they want and then maybe refine it slightly and then bring it back into something, you know, that's more to do with reality.
Do you keep contact with your pupils after
yes.
they've gone? Do they seek your opinion?
Sometimes, yeah. And yeah, at the Royal College of Art, we have a gala fashion show, and I've invited lots of them to be guests of honour. And they came to my leaving party.
Yes,
lots of
indeed.
Them, so, yes.
I mean, you've just retired then from
yes,
the Royal College of
yeah.
Art. Was that a big, did that feel like a big decision?
A big decision. But I think you know when you're ready, and education's changing slightly as well. It's getting tougher. But it wasn't because of that. I mean, I love what I do, but I just thought the time was right to do other things. My husband's retired now as well, and we just want to explore different countries, go away for a couple of months, you know, and it's only when you retire you can actually do that.
Do you ever get out the pattern cutting shears and the sewing machine and run yourself up something these days?
No, I don't. I might do a bit of mending on the machine. I've still got my sewing machine that I had as a 21st present. And it's still running. And I used it the other day just to mend some jeans for my son.
Let's talk about practicalities on this island, and specifically the practicalities of what you're going to wear. Let's say that you're washed up.
Yes.
Let's say that you have to find something or make something to wear. What would you use around you?
Well, I hope it's a hot island.
Yeah.
I think I'd look for some palm trees or something, make myself a grass skirt. And some sort of top.
Coconut shoes, I'm wondering.
Coconut shells, maybe.
That's
yeah.
A bra.
Yeah.
Yes, not shoes. Right, let's have your eighth track then. Tell me about this. What are we going to hear, Wendy?
It's Lovey and Rose by Grace Jones, which actually roughly translates into seeing life through rose-coloured glasses, which I think I probably do sometimes. And we saw her live. I think she's amazing. I mean, she's got such an amazing body and so powerful. And after seeing her live, we went to a party and she turned up there, which was even, you know, a real bonus. And I think, you know, it sums up life at that time. We were holidaying, you know, in south of France with friends of ours. And first time in New York, it was the taxi driver's strike. They were striking against Concorde, landing there. So we had to get a helicopter into Manhattan for the first time ever. It was just brilliant. La vie en rose. Il m'a dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entre dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais le corps.
La vie en rose, Grace Jones. I'm going to give you, Wendy Dagworthy, the books now. You get to take the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare to this island, and you're allowed to take one other book along too. What else will it be?
It's going to be The Rage Quartet by Paul Scott. It was a toss-up between the quick Guardian crosswords that we do every morning, but I read this book many, many years ago, and I just love that whole colonial life.
Right, that's yours then. And yeah. A luxury to make life on the island just a little bit more comfortable.
Red lipstick.
Which you are wearing today, and
I'm wearing
splendid
it, and
it is
I've
too.
Worn it since the age of 20. I never go out without it.
I'm going to give you a case of that, and I'm going to give you a fridge to put it in.
Oh, brilliant. It might melt.
I'm really worried that it would, yes. And finally, if you could only save one of these eight tracks, which one would it be?
God, this has been so hard. I've been agonising all the way here. But I think it's No Woman, No Cry.
It's yours. Professor Wendy Dagworthy, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.